So we were talking earlier on about this tradwife trend. Elaine was listening and joins us now. Hi, Elaine.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right, so what's your view?
Right, I was driving this morning and now I heard, you know, I was listening to bits, obviously I was on the road, and then I heard the comment, I think it was an email, was it, or maybe a text, saying, you know, about children of working mothers. Now, I hope I get this right. You know, they could have behavioural problems.
Yeah, that's right.
The messy homes and all the rest, you know. And I pulled onto the side of the road because I was angry first, and then I was very sad because I just thought, I mean, put it like this, I'm a grandmother, but I was a working mother. I was one of those working mothers, albeit at far better supports than a lot of working mothers have nowadays, because I had a great family, you know, support. Yeah. Now, I just thought, if I was a young working mother listening to that, you talk about having a guilty complex, you know, about, you know, somebody making a statement to say, you know, that children could have behavioural problems and messy homes and all this goes with it. And then I thought then, I was thinking about today and about all the young girls that have done their leaving cert, right? And they're waiting on the results, Greg. They're hopeful, their life ahead of them. You know, they want to go either to university or go into a training programme. They want to train to do something in this country, hopefully stay in this country, and, you know, and be an asset to the country. You know, either in whatever jobs they do, they'll be working mothers, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, you know, I just thought, very, very sad, because, you know, the support system in this country, I made a comment to your one of your researchers there, and, you know, in this country, the big companies, the big high-tech companies, a lot of the big pharmaceuticals, a lot of the big other companies or whatever, what supports have they got for working mothers, first of all? Mm-hmm. I don't want Letterkenny. I'm sure in Letterkenny, I don't think there's any crèches attached to any of the big, you know, facilities. Now, albeit the government are going to say it's because of regulations and all the rest, but that's, then the other thing is the high fees for crèches of the working mothers who leave their children off every morning, the high fees that have been charged, you know, and these mothers are going to work to pay into a system to keep a system going. You know, and their children are going to be doing the same. Those little children that they're having are going to be the next generation who are providing for us older people, supporting all the health systems, all the education systems by paying into a system, you know. And I just thought, I felt very sad because I thought, if I was a young working mother, you know, listening to that, you know, I'd be saying, like, what? You know, why? You know, I would just be feeling so guilty and so sad, you know. And that's just a comment I want to make.
No, you're right. People work really hard, don't they? And I think sometimes we have to be careful with our language in that when we're trying to maybe defend something we believe in, other words, we don't try and elevate ourselves or our views by putting someone else down. Or maybe, you know, I think that's something we don't think on enough, is like, what impact might my words have on another person?
That's right. And the thing about it is, I mean, most women, nearly all women nowadays in this country, have to work, Greg.
Yeah.
They have to work. They must work. Huge mortgages, huge rents, huge fees. I mean, pain, and I mean, most mothers that I know of anyway, they all have to work, and they're working very, very hard. I mean, you know, and they're all right. What's a messy house? If the children are happy, coming into a messy house, or, you know, what matter? Children are happy and loved, which the majority of children hopefully are, you know. And I mean, the thing I would love to say to working mothers today is, and I'll just leave it at that, they should be looking at all the political parties and asking them, what policies do they have to support me when I'm, you know, in the workplace? They should be looking at what policies every, you know, all the political parties have, you know, at the minute, and what they're going to do in this country to help support working mothers, because mothers are going to have to work. Why put our children, why put our daughters particularly, you know, through, you know, all the systems and encourage them and all the rest and say, you know, this is what you do. You want a career. Why, you know, do all of this? You know, and then turn around and not support them when they're doing the biggest job of their life, having their children, you know?
Okay, Elaine, listen, thanks very much for calling us, so making contact. I know you listened to it and it bothered you, so that's your voice heard, and I appreciate your time. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye, take care, bye-bye. That's Elaine there, retread wife. A caller said, traditional wives or traditional housewives seem a fad for American super rich, unlikely to catch on here. Not many of us own three airlines. And if you were looking at, it's almost cosplaying, really, because if you look at the videos of those that have gone most viral, they're dressed like it's the 50s, you know, like Marilyn Monroe or something. I know Marilyn Monroe's before the 50s, but you know what I mean? It's going back, it's cosplaying, it's role playing. I'm not sure it's actually... I'm not sure it's actually really a lifestyle. Greg, this is disgusting. Billy Bustard does so much for the community and the cancer boss is benefiting everyone in Donegal. If people had a family member that need cancer boss, then they might change their tune. But we don't know. Maybe they did. And I think that's people who have objected to him being there officially. Hi, Greg. The diamond in Donegal town should be left alone. There wasn't a thing wrong with it. A load of money spent on it and nothing great about it now. The goodness all taken out of it for locals and visitors alike. Is Donegal town not a market square? Traditionally, yes, it would have been high. Traditionally, it was a car park. I remember when it was a car park. What happened to that before that? I don't know. I've seen pictures of horse and carts on it. But back in the day, the old Citroen or the Renault 4... or whatever, the Ford Cortina would have been seen parked on the diamond. There's quite a number of car parking spaces. I would say, though, there was an awful lot of wings chipped and wind mirrors taken off it, but you used to park on the diamond. But what really I remember as a child us really effectively doing is, and my dad had a really long, crappy old Audi. Not Audi. What was it? It wasn't an Audi. It'll come to me anyway. Yeah, it was an Audi. It was an old Audi. You know the Audi where the entire back of the car is black and the you put the indicators on and every light's flashing because all of the rust has seized all of the various parts behind the lenses. But you would drive in there and every time he'd do a loop and drive back out again. Never got a parking space. But anyway, that's just a memory from the diamond. Where are all the Donegal councillors? We all voted Donegal Town is so negative the minute. We all voted Donegal Town is so negative at the minute. That obviously the listener will understand exactly what that means. Right, okay. I think it is actually time for a very quick break. I'm going to take the quarter past break a little bit early because we're talking Wellness Wednesday, and it's a tough subject by the one. And I understand that maybe you've been affected by it. It might be a bit difficult for you to listen to, or just maybe you're not in the space to listen to it. But for those, hopefully it is, it's going to be useful because we're going to speak to Connor McCarthy. Connor and his wife Kathy's son Ross died by suicide last year, just before his 25th birthday. And they want to talk about the HUG charity, H-U-G-G. It's a national suicide bereavement charity. So as I say, it's a tough subject, but unfortunately so many people go through this. And you know, we talk an awful lot about the awful loss of life on our roads and what we can do about it. And a reason I think that gets more coverage than sort of an equal loss of life and perhaps even more through suicide is that it's very clear to see what we can do to fix the problem of people dying on our roads if we slow down, if we wear our seatbelts, if we don't allow ourselves to be distracted, if we don't drink and drive. The instances of death on the roads and serious injury would reduce dramatically. It is a fact. It would reduce dramatically if we all took on that advice. And I do know then people say, well, why don't we talk as much about mental health? We talk about it an awful lot on this program, but it is so much more complex. There's so many complexities to it. But anyway, we're going to be speaking to Connor very shortly. Stay right where you are. Now, we are joined on the program by Connor and Kathy, who very sadly lost their son Ross to suicide last year. This was just before his 25th birthday. And to both of you, I genuinely can't imagine what it must be like and what you're going through. And just our deepest condolences and sympathies to the both of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. We both appreciate it. It is very difficult. Every day is very difficult. There's no doubt about that. We have found great support, though, through HUG. And I suppose what we would like to talk about, Greg, really, is the HUG meeting that's scheduled for Bundoran this Saturday, and to try and encourage other people in a similar position to ourselves to attend and seek help from those who are in a similar position, those who Greg will understand.
Was it easy, Conor? And you know, the thing about how we deal with things, it can change from person to person, but also it can change. People can have different views within a relationship as well, or within a family group in terms of sort of seeking support or how they want to work through their grief. Was it difficult, Conor, for you, or indeed for you, Kathy, to sort of, you know, go to an organisation like HUG or was there trepidation there? Kathy, do you mind answering that one?
How are you? No, when this happened, the biggest problem I had in terms of support was not being able to find any for parents in particular. Like, losing a child, you know, for anybody is extremely traumatising, and losing a young adult like Ross was just, you know, insurmountable for us. So I found HUG through, basically, I call it Dr. Google, because I couldn't find an immediate service. So I suppose I was very lucky to come across them. And immediately they were so supportive, immediate understanding, because everybody that works in HUG, they've all been impacted by suicide personally. Mm-hmm. So, it's very close to every individual's heart that works in HUG from the top down. And I suppose for us, in terms of attending any HUG meeting, you know, you're talking about extremely difficult emotions, and you have immediate understanding in terms of that group. And I suppose, you know, people say, oh, would you not try counselling? And I suppose for us, counselling isn't for everybody. So this is a form of, I suppose, a little bit like group therapy or group counselling, in terms of shared understanding without having to seek out one-to-one, which can work for, you know, people individually if that's what they want to do. But I suppose in our case, we weren't ready for counselling as such, and I suppose this was a way of sharing very difficult mm-hmm. conversations with like-minded people.
It's people presumably that would have an understanding of this particular type of traumatic grief, in losing a child, but also in losing a child to suicide. It is a particularly traumatic type of grief, Conor, that you know you can best work through with people that understand that.
Yes, because, like, in terms of talking to people, everyone feels bad for you. There's no doubt about that, but they don't really get it, and that you can't expect them to fully understand or fully appreciate, you know, the emotions that you're going through, like how difficult, you know, every day is, and just trying to find ways to manage and to cope and to get through every day.
How important is the understanding element of it? I mean, obviously there's probably always, you know, unanswered questions, I'd imagine, but to try and process or have an understanding, that word doesn't even seem to cover it, right? But it seems separate to what might be the situation if you lost a father or a mother, or there might be a disease involved, or even in a road traffic collision. And there's not a hierarchy of loss. I'm not trying to suggest that. But is there a particular, in these conversations, to sort of try and get an understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose, and with suicide, you know, I know we've come a long way in terms of being able to talk about that, you know, given our historical ways of dealing with it. You know, there's still a lot of, you know, difficult emotions around suicide for families to comprehend. They don't really want maybe to talk about it, or they're embarrassed about it, or they have shame around it, or anger, or, you know, just, you know, ways that they can't actually name the emotions that they're trying to talk about. And I suppose in this particular group, because it's such a traumatic event for people, you know, and we have, you know, people who have, you know, fathers, mothers, siblings, aunts, uncles, grandparents, you know, that have had suicide in their families, you know, and cross generations, from very young people, you know, over 18 attending, right through to people in their 70s. Like, we've such a spectrum of people. And I suppose, it's, you know, we want to draw people out and into those forums and not have any fear about going to such a place. Like, everything is completely confidential, you know, completely private. And, you know, the more we can grow this organisation, particularly in the Northwest, like we're in Sligo, so we would have been travelling to Letterkenny, which is about an hour and a half drive, 2 hour meeting drive, you know, an hour and a half back. But at least we know it's there. So I suppose it's trying to get more services like this into this region in particular.
Yeah, you're working hard, aren't you, to sort of try and establish one of these facilities in Sligo, because there's no county that does not have people living within it that have to go through this. So why should anyone in any particular county have to travel in another county to get the likes of these great services from HUG?
Yes, and I know Fiona Toomey is working really hard on that to get a service into Sligo. And I suppose the one big challenge is trying to get volunteers to come forward to become facilitators. And I suppose that's something that we will look at in the future. But you have to be a minimum of 3 years bereaved in order to go through that very early, very difficult journey before you can really help people. Yeah. But I suppose it just attending those meetings has been so helpful within this last year for us.
And I presume these types of services, you know, have to be very flexible. I mean, some people might attend as couples. You might have a couple that the people attend separately. Maybe that's the way they want to go through it. Others maybe want to feel that expressing emotion is how to get through. Others might be somewhat more withdrawn and prefer to listen. So a service like HUG has to be adaptive, doesn't it, to, and I'm sure it is, to sort of meet all the needs that are there.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there are people who can go to those meetings who never open their mouth. Yeah. They just simply sit there, listen and absorb the information. And then you may get a text message from that person, you know, at a later stage to say, thanks for sharing. I felt you understood what I was trying to say. You know, somebody else said what I wanted to say. You know, so, you know, everybody is so different. Mm. And at least they can almost hear themselves within the meeting without having to say anything. So that's really positive as well.
Greg, from my perspective as a man and as a father, I've noticed at HUG meetings and in general that there are very few men who actually attend.
Okay.
It's mostly females, it's mostly women.
And that's not that and we're not affected by it, Connor. We're doing the man thing, aren't we? We're bottling it up, or we're, you know, stiff upper lip.
Yeah, but what I would really like to get across, Greg, is the importance of men going to these meetings, of opening up, of sharing their feelings, because men do have feelings, men are hurting, men are breaking down over this, and for men to understand that there are other men out there who are willing to talk and willing to engage and willing to share and willing to be open and willing to understand. I think that's very important. And, you know, I would like to encourage men to go to HUG meetings, to go to Bundoran and Saturday afternoon, you know, to get more of a shared understanding that there are others out there, other males out there that can be of some assistance.
And Connor, this must be very important to the both of you, because obviously, you know, it's very recent that you lost Ross Kathy talked of you know, working through the trauma and the grief, and trauma and grief are two separate things, and grief can fade and trauma can stay and vice versa as well. It's in very, very complex. But obviously this means an awful lot to you, and I know, Connor, and I'm going to give a good push to the date and the venue, all right? But it must mean a lot to you to be out advocating whilst you're still going through this awful situation yourselves.
Well, look, we genuinely believe that it's very important that we do advocate and we do speak out. Obviously, we've lost Ross, and there's nothing we can do about that. But, you know, we would like his memory will live on. But if there's anything that we can do in our position to help others and to let others know that there is help out there, we will do that. We will put ourselves out there to do that for others. Because, yes, we do genuinely believe that people deserve help and deserve support, and that support is there.
And I think whether it's fellas or women or whatever the case might be, we and everyone's entitled to make the decision as to when they seek support or if they ever seek support. But often I think we might say, well, that's not for me. And I've seen this in numerous interviews as it relates to maybe cancer support services, bereavement services, whatever it might be. I think what people should do if they can is go along and see if it is for them or what they might get from it. You know, don't precluded, or don't say, no, it's not. Well, maybe it is, and it could really improve yourselves. Because often we carry with us, you know, an anxiety or something like that there, and we just batter on and we don't realise we actually are. And life can be a little bit easier and life can be better in lots of cases. And this Information Eve event is on Saturday the 17th of August. It's free. It's in the Great Northern Hotel in Bundoran, which is a wonderful setting for anything, but particularly something like this. There's going to be expert, compassionate conversation on understanding suicide grief, and local supports available to adults. The doors open at 12:30 in the afternoon with a speaker at 1 o'clock. And you're advised to visit hug.ie for more details. And that's hugg.ie. And it sounds to me that it's a particular environment, Kathy, if you know what I mean. It's not, I don't have too much details here. Get there at 12:30. See who's about. I don't know how you want to frame it yourself. There'll be a speaker at one, but I think the key thing is getting your backside to it and then see what happens.
Yeah, and we've gone to a number of these seminars previously, and they always have a really expert speaker in who really, really can open up the conversation much better than we can on any level. They're just experts in their own field on this subject. You know, I suppose, you know, the things that we would have found really difficult are like, you know, simple things like Father's Day or Mother's Day or holidays, anniversaries.
And there's one a month, isn't there, between birthdays?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Christmas, you know, like we were away recently and there are now five of us out, but the setting was set for six accidentally, and it's just, you know, every day there's a trigger, there is something to spark, you know, that trauma. And I suppose it's been able to talk to people who understand that completely.
Okay.
I know. So even this morning, Greg, I was running on the beach in Ross's Point, and there were four women coming towards me, and one of them I recognized as being a former nurse who would have looked after Ross when he was in ICU when he was born. And like, it's just a trigger. There's triggers every day, you know, you just can't get away from it. Yeah. And it's just to try and understand that and to try and work your way through that every day.
I mean, listen, you're doing this for yourselves, and primarily you're doing it for others, but you're also doing it in Ross's name. And I don't want to just ask anything that might upset you, but Connor, just to remember Ross, can you describe Ross to us, if you don't mind, just to listeners get a sense of your son.
Yeah, thanks for asking, Greg. I mean, Ross is a beautiful boy. He really was a gifted athlete. He was a really, really good sportsman, an excellent soccer player. I remember one under league game where he actually scored 9 goals in the one game.
That's taken a hand.
Yeah. We wanted him taken off.
I'd have subbed him off if I was the coach. Yeah.
So, he really, you know, he really enjoyed his sport and he enjoyed that part of life. But I think as he got into younger adulthood, things became more difficult for him. And he never really got a break, Greg. You know, everything that he did after that just kind of seemed to rebound on him. And I guess he just couldn't take it anymore. But he was a very sensitive, a very kind, very, very, very generous.
And has great friends. Like, you know, recent thing, you know, again, we talk of a trigger, but going over to the grave, a group of his friends, and we still don't know who did this, but had a plaque with his name on it, you know, very much loved, and flowers and just things like that that happen, you know, that he's still so present. And I keep him present every single
day.
He's
always going to be with you, of course, but not in the way that you want in the physical sense.
No.
But I'm sure he's looking down. He is very proud of the both of you and what you're doing, because it's to help other people too, which is what it's all about. All right, it's HUGG, H-U-G-G. Go to hugg.ie and find more information about this free information event. It's in the beautiful Great Northern Hotel in Bundoran. It starts at 12:30, and you're going to meet people like Connor and Kathy as well. An expert, expect compassionate conversation on understanding suicide grief and local supports available. Thanks for helping us to get to know Ross a little bit, which is very much appreciated.
Thank you, Greg.
And thanks to both you, Connor McCarthy and Kathy. Thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourselves, please.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000 and quite literally. amazing people, and you just wonder how we get through this stuff. But we do, and it's always, you know, with the support of each other. It's amazing, really, that we so much, especially on a show like this, so much is like, you know, one person might have an opinion and the others, and that's healthy and that's fine, right? Or I might have one set of beliefs and another person might have another, and, you know, we knock heads and we sort it all, you know, and we might part with different points of view and all that kind of stuff. But fundamentally, we all need each other, and you never know when it might be. But no person is an island, and you just don't know. And organisations like HUG and other services that we've been talking about, and the fabulous services we have throughout County Donegal, it's about us as people, as a community, actually working together when we need each other. And we're still fantastic at that. And I don't think we'll ever lose it. I hope we don't. But in the worst situations, it's when we come together and support each other. And I suppose we need to focus on that sometimes too, rather than that which might divide us. All right, so that means it is time for Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast preview, but also to get a little bit of business news. Chris Ashmore is back with us again. Chris, how was your week?
Very good, Greg.
Good stuff.
Weather wasn't bad, eh?
Right, okay. Yeah. Windy,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, well, what's...
A lot of people like sailing, kite surfing. Never tried that. How do you get the kite down when you finished kite surfing? I've seen one person there in the bay struggling with that.
You're asking the wrong person.
Amount of wind. But anyway,
speaking of wind, wind generation in Ireland was the third best on record for the month of July. Yes, we kind of knew that. Now, what's interesting from a Donegal perspective. Donegal has dropped out of the top five windy electricity producing counties. Cork now leading the way in July, followed by Kerry, Galway, Mayo and Tipp. One of the reasons being that there's been a slowdown in the number of new developments and getting connected to the grid.
Is there any idea how much of our electricity needs that generation is serving?
Well, it's getting up to about 32%. Mm-hmm. Now, Wind Energy Ireland, which is the umbrella group for the wind energy sector, they are somewhat concerned that there's a lot of planning issues and that we're going to miss out on our carbon emission targets based on the targets for 2030 that in the first half of this year, on board Planola has rejected planning applications from 8 wind farms. Now, their combined capacity, this might mean a lot of people, was 459 megawatts, but that's a lot of electricity.
I wonder where we are at in terms of battery storage of this power, because, you know, it's great that we sort of meet 30% of our needs when we're drawing down on it, but I was reading an article about the future, and the future is storing this electricity
Absolutely.
Until such time as we actually need it.
Yeah, and the farming community latching in on this, because... Like a lot of these things, the batteries initially, I understand, are going to take up a reasonable amount of space. But this could be an opportunity for a few people to get a little bit of income for having a battery storage.
Right. So instead of battery hands, we've got batteries.
Okay. It's a changing world.
All right. Responsible job. What's this about?
Yeah, well, I know you're always on the lookout for something, and I thought, yeah.
I want to be headhunted, Chris.
Yeah, well, AirNav Ireland. What's that? AirNav Ireland. Well, they are the provider of air traffic management services across the country, and they are looking to recruit air traffic controllers.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't think you trust me with that.
Well, will you move the right little slot?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you can apply when you're 19. You have an allowance as a student of €368 per week during your initial training.
Right.
And then you start off with 34 grand a year. Average salary is 58 grand a year. And an air traffic controller chief with 8 years of experience earns an average salary of €103,430.
Now we're getting interesting. And, yeah. But I'd say there's not that many jobs available.
There's less than 20. But when they come on stream, you can not surprisingly suspect that they will be well oversubscribed.
For sure.
Air traffic control, which of course so vital.
Yeah. It is
not local,
but astonishing job. It's an astonishing job behind the scenes what they actually do and what they have to coordinate. The latest Donegal.ie newsletter is out now.
Yes, now Love Donegal Day. That takes place on September the 25th, so the countdown is on. Now, if you're not familiar with the Donegal.ie website, do go on there. Back through the County Council, gives you all sorts of information, and they really tie in well with Love Donegal Day. Get the message out. Donegal's a place for investment. There's jobs available, adventure, relaxation, so much more. They're now producing a newsletter, which... if you sign up, obviously, you're going to get it out to you on a regular basis, and it gives you a great insight into what's going on in the county. It's geared as much about people abroad as it is here. And Love Donegal Day, it's the fifth year of it, and it's really a chance for anybody with a connection to with Donegal to tie in and hopefully stimulate some business as well. There's endless possibilities. So certainly the Donegal.ie website, worth having a look if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah, should we stick with newsletters and jump to Davies Digest? What's that?
Thought I'd throw in, this is for the people who are particularly interested in business and stocks and shares. Davy, one of the leading firms in the financial sector, Dublin-based, they are now publishing a weekly newsletter, which gives you all the latest roundup of market trends, topics and news. So that will appeal to a certain amount of people, and it's pretty informative.
New hotel plans. This is in Donegal Town, I'm guessing.
No, you're not.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, on this occasion, it's McGettigan's Hotel in the heart of Letterkenny.
Oh, right, of course. You might have seen that. Donegal's a bit far away from Letterkenny to get on the
Now, this is an ongoing
planning. Sorry, all our listeners in the south of the Gap. I'm really sorry about this.
Ongoing planning.
It's, O'Donnell's, they're looking to extend there, build rooms out the back.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of plans in the pipeline. The process can take a while. In McGettigan's Hotel in the centre of Letterkenny, after a long protracted process, they have got the green light.
That's
for
going
an
back
extension.
A long while.
It
That's
is,
when I
it
used
is.
To troll through the council website.
Yeah, yeah.
There's plans out the back of that.
This is it. So it's 61-bedroom extension. There's going to be a spa as well. A number of planning conditions, because as you can imagine, in the centre of the town, the whole construction process is going to have to be regulated times a day or whatever.
And you're backing onto a residential area.
You're backing onto a residential area, yeah. And then they're going to put on an extra floor. There's going to be, you know, it's going to be a pretty big project. But bottom line, 61 additional rooms and a spa in the middle of the town.
Yeah,
so
already on top of what they're offering already. Yeah. And any notes for our diaries?
Just a reminder, now a couple of weeks away, Tuesday the 3rd of September, local enterprise office are having their next online Start Your Own Business program. So if you have an idea, click on to the local enterprise office, find out more about that, and it's a great way to... sow the seed.
And by complete coincidence, and a two-fingered salute to my suggestion, there's a North Donegal biased. We're going straight to South Donegal. Aren't we, Letterbarrow? That is the Letterbarrow in the south of the county, I take it.
Yes, Letterbarrow is in the south of the county when I looked at a map last. Yeah. Now, John McCrory, a former guard, he also spent time out in Cyprus as a UN peacekeeper. Now, he set up a tour guide business called Walking Ireland, and his business has grown considerably. He does local tours around Donegal, South Donegal. He does ones out of Letterkenny. Indeed, he can custom make them, whether you're an individual or a group. And surprise, surprise, you know, he says Donegal basically has so much to offer, and it's an area of growth.
The whole of Donegal, like, it's just phenomenal. You can take them anywhere. Like, I can bring a person in Donegal town there and hold them there for 4 days, or Letterkenny or Buncrana or somewhere, and take them on 4 or 5 different trips. And each day they're getting something completely different. So we have a fantastic county, we have fantastic scenery, we have fantastic facilities, and they are blown away by it when they get here.
Okay, James McGrory, much more from him on the podcast. And a second business?
The second business now, a new sustainable fashion centre is opening in Letterkenny tomorrow, actually. The Circular Dress Collaborative is a new hub for sustainable fashion. So what is it? Well, essentially, this is a chance for people to really promote the circular economy. You can bring down clothing that you had. It could be a wedding dress. Not maybe in your case, Greg, but it could be a smart suit or something that you want to give away. Now, Sheila Clancy O'Donnell, fascinating story here, native of New York, married to a man from Duty, was very much involved at the high end of the fashion industry in the United States, has been back in Letterkenny for 19 years, and now she has set up this new venture, and you can actually make a few quid out of it, because you'll make an appointment with her, she'll look what you're bringing down, she's putting it into this warehouse out in the Thorn area of Letterkenny. You get 60% of what it sells for. She gets 40% commission. And rather than maybe some of this ending up in a landfill site, it's going to be used again.
You know, you may be a bride who spent 5,000 euros on a wedding dress, but that dress is not worth 5,000 euros anymore. And you have to think, you have so much competition right now between the online resale, between the fast fashion, the sale racks, you know, other vintage and charity shops, and the charity shops do really great things, and I'm not taking away from them. I'm just adding less to go to the landfill. So they've got to put the price on. They bring it in. We try to sell it for them. They get 60% of the proceeds. We get 40%. And with that 40%, I have women coming in to volunteer to help sew. You know, eventually we'll have the repair. We'll have the repurposing. So if something comes in and it really is old and can't sell, I'll look at it and say, let's redesign it to this or that.
Yeah, it's interesting that. And I think tapping in at a time whereby sort of circular economy, you know, sort of pushing back against disposable items is actually really in trend now at the moment. That's the new boast. It's not, oh, I paid 500 euro for this. It's actually, I got this for 15 euro in a charity shop. Now, I think there's two markets here. I don't think this is necessarily, or perhaps, I don't know, going to damage the charity shop sector. But there is, I think people in their wardrobe have another sort of group of category of clothing that they're holding on to that they can monetize, and I think the splits seems really fair there as well. So it'll be very interesting to see how it pans out. I think it's certainly going to be a busy shop, Chris.
Absolutely.
Right, if we want to hear more from both of your guests, how do we go about doing so? We can do it right now, actually. I'll do that. It's on the podcast right now. It's available for you at highlandradio.com. You can stream it or you can download it and listen at your leisure, whether it's whilst you're cooking dinner or out for a walk or having a vape. Whatever it might be. Or if you want to listen to it on the radio, Chris.
Yes. Well, you can hear more from Sheila Clancy O'Donnell about the Circular Dress Collaborative and John McGrory about Walking Ireland by tuning in on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wants to contact you, Chris, that doesn't change. That never changes.
Business
I'm
matters.
Cancelled now.
Business matters at highlandradio.com is the email address.
Chris, thank you very much for that. Look forward to seeing you next week. A quick reminder to get your last entries in to our competition. We've got two family heritage cards valued at 90 euro each to give away. The cards offer access for a family, two adults and up to five children to over 45 OPW managed heritage sites across the county and country. You can visit any or all of the attractions as often as you like during the validity of the heritage card that you will win. You can see heritage.ie for all event listings in Donegal and across the country. And also, too, they have a feature where you can plan My Events Trail, which sounds pretty exciting. So here's a little riddle for you, a little poem, see what you think. Just outside Letterkenny, corn and flax were ground in a place where you still see the wheel that once went round and round. Where are we talking about? Text your answer and where you're from to 086 60 25000 and your name. 086 60 25000, text or WhatsApp, or if you want to email, comments at highlandradio.com. But be quick, I'll give you about 4 minutes, then we'll draw the winners for today, because we've got two of those to give away. Quite generous, two adults and five children. Well, good luck for birth certs either. Two adults and five children can make up that family unit. Now, Fine Gael Senator Maria Byrne has made a call for more so-called pop-up Garda stations to be set up around the country. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good, Senator. Now, listen, I don't want to be cynical or have a go, but I'll get it out of the way very early on. This sounds like almost like an admittance of failure, because the dominant conversation we have in rural areas of Donegal is the closure of Garda stations. And if the truth be told, it's happened to some extent under your party's watch. So it doesn't seem, it seems a bit strange for us to be sort of replacing the Garda stations that were closing down, you know, with pop-up Garda stations. Is this an interim, or what's your thinking behind it?
Well, Greg, I suppose there are many Garda stations around the country, and in Limerick, we've actually got two of them, two main Garda stations. But putting in a pop-up station, it creates a Garda presence on the street. And I think that that's what people are looking for. And, you know, it creates certainty not only for the community that are maybe using the streets by day or in the evening time, but also for the businesses as well. The fact that guards are going to be visibly seen on the street. And by having a pop-up station, they can come and go from that as they carry out their duties. So I think it's about, you know, adding to what's there. We've also got 10 mobile units that are currently around the country as well. So, you know, new ways are being looked at doing things. And I believe by having more Gardaí in the street in terms of a pop-up station, it has worked very successfully in Wexford.
What does it look like, Senator? I don't mean literally. I mean, I do mean literally as well. I can just imagine two guards standing under a gazebo, you know, but I presume it's not
I'm
that.
I'm just going to use what I'm used to. And we have a number of derelict buildings in our main street, and one of them could be used in terms of, you know, that the Gardaí could pop in and out, somebody on the street, you know, something happens to them, they can go straight to the, you know, the pop-up station or the temporary station. And, you know, that there's somebody that can deal with their issue. Whereas some people are a bit intimidated, maybe having to go to the main guard station. But certainly in terms of, it also helps in terms of people that are maybe begging or you know, approaching people on the street, and that it does. I think having a presence on the street is the main issue.
Yeah, because I think in your commentary you noted the number of officers on the beat in recent years left some communities feeling left behind. But that's kind of, is it not, really the policy of An Garda Síochána, kind of the way of policing now? It's only those decisions, is it not, that takes officers off the beat?
Well, you know, one thing that I've been calling for as well, Greg, and it's not in this press release, is there's a number of guards tied up in terms of maybe court, you know, office positions in terms of officers in the Garda station. A lot of those jobs could be done by civil servants or by, you know, we'll say civil people.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily always need Gardaí. So any way that we can get more Gardaí onto the street, certainly. And the number of Gardaí is increasing in areas, but it's about building and running, I suppose, units complementary alongside that, you know, to give people certainty, I think.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time, Senator. That's Senator Maria Byrne there. What do you think about that? Would you welcome a pop-up Garda station? I was going to say the Diamond in Donegal Town, but it would probably get a ticket on the main street in Letterkenny, Bunkrana, Glenties. There's already Garda stations in some of those places, but you know what I mean, parts of this county or where you are that there isn't. Would you welcome that? Maybe you're a business person. What do you think? Part of me feels that the argument is that maybe this is a solution to a problem that has been created in terms of the closure of our Garda stations. I mean, we've got to the point now where it's announced that, you know, Garda will be in such and such a Garda station for 4 hours on a Tuesday. You know, we've gone so backwards that would have had a sergeant in it permanently almost, and another guard going back in the day. So maybe it feels like we are going backwards. Right, okay, our competition winner. The answer, of course, was New Mills. Damien Callahan, Listillion and Letterkenny, you've received a family pass. And Noel Maxwell in Raphoe, you've also received a pass. We'll be in touch with you as to how you can collect that. Now, I want to mention the music. Irish Music Month is back. Now, This is actually really quite an important and significant competition. And the reason I know that is, firstly, got to meet the acts that entered in previous years, got to see where they went, the exposure and the airplay they've received. Others that actually went further in the competition, they've really gone on to big things, you know, regular airplay, and also, you know, supporting big acts in London and elsewhere. So this is significant, and it's significant right from the beginning for this part and also as you progress in it. So we're inviting, as part of Irish Music Month, we're inviting you to enter our search for a new local hero. That part of it, I would love to rebrand, but that is the way it is. So the finalists can be bands, can be a group, it can be a solo artist, it can be a rapper. It can be anything, anyone creating great original music that you believe deserves to be heard and also supported and nurtured. It has to be an original song. You don't have to write it between now and the entry date. You might have a catalogue of songs or a song that you've released to a few followers on Facebook. That's fine. To enter, simply send your original song to localhero@highlandradio.com, localhero@highlandradio.com, along with a short piece about yourself and your contact details before Friday the 23rd of August. And Highland Radio then will draw up a list of four artists, bands, musicians to perform live on this show. And it's a special show. We're looking to take it out of the studio, do it from on Green on, and it's going to be a nice thing. We'll tell you more about that as the time gets closer. Now, we don't just draw up a shortlist, by the way. We have an expert panel of people that will select that shortlist. Each of our four finalists that will perform for us live and we'll back 100% receives €875. And then we will, between a mixture of judges and listeners' votes, decide on a local winner who goes on then for national consideration. And from there, the prizes get bigger and the potentials get bigger. But even at this level, it's huge. For more information, log on to highlandradio.com or check out our socials. Now, we have a massive entry last year, and it was all different types of music, and it was all judged the same. What is good music? Not what genre is, what would work well, what was good music? And we selected a fantastic song that still to this day I listen to. So if you want to get involved and potentially be our next local hero, please head to our website, highlandradio.com, and get more information. Or if really, say, for instance, someone in your family is musical, and maybe they even have a bit of a platform already, that's okay too. Get in touch with us through that email address. And we'll go to the website, follow the instructions. It's really very exciting, and it's really very, very significant. It's a national competition to be a part of. Right, that's where we have to leave it on the 9 till noon show today.